Just I can't see you all. I will try to see you all. No. Well, just start talking. I think that we can manage in that way. So who will start?
So I've already asked a few questions, if I may
Yes,
ask, about the
please. Yes,
continuous
please.
integration. So
Yeah.
and the continuous deployment. I obviously we as UFAL are not running services for business. Well, we are trying to, but we do not aim at the reliability of that service to be 99% or something like that. So we're also very slow in including all these updates to our models, and we do it everything by hand. And I was always wondering if the tools like Jenkins, which I don't know, I don't have experience with that, if they simplify that for you, or if they create additional burden so that you have to modify your normal ways of handling modules to something that the tool helps you with. So if there is what is the trade-off of using integration tools like Jenkins compared to doing everything by hand in shell scripts, because that's what you do every day anyway.
Well, the same thing that happens to human translators, that somebody came and started, used machines to do their work and start, eating from their pie, happened to us. Basically, as everybody started to offer machine translation, it became a commodity. Like anybody can do machine translations these days. And you have seen the numbers. It's really a tough business, and the margin is not that high, right? We can discuss why we do that for profit and these things. But the margin is getting smaller. So there is definitely less people working on machine translations than 10 years ago. And the customers are paying customers who do it for their own money. So it's not like a government job where the money was quite generous because it was a research project. So as the amount of people is getting lower, the number of languages that you have to support is growing, right? We do 76 languages. So, well, I think that we have like 8 languages that are big languages, important languages that we still build manually so that people really look into the data and focus on the actual errors. And these languages are made manually. So in the building pipeline, they contain, well, I wouldn't say hacks, but differences and divergences from the mainstream. And the rest of the languages, also the languages for which we do not have that much data, or languages that we do not have to time to do thoroughly, we are using this Jenkins pipeline. So we build them automatically. For example, Czech is now being built automatically. So the initial barrier that you have, what you have to learn is quite significant for somebody who comes from a background like I have. Like 20 years ago, we would write a C++ program and do, a couple of parameters, and it would work, and it would be relatively simple. Now, it's a lot of tools, but even I was able to learn that in like 1 month, right? And I consider myself old. Like if you take the dinosaur example, I have my food pretty far from the drinking pot, right? It's already, the distance is getting longer and longer. But it is that you can, get the basics of writing Jenkins pipeline in a couple of days and start doing it properly, and so that it's reusable in like 1 month. And
So you have explained to me that the programmers are scarcer for this. There are fewer people you have at hand. At the same time, it is harder for people who are experienced in this area to use this tool, actually. So where is the gain from that Jenkins pipeline? That is, I already see some answer to my question. But
in ideal world, you have people with different skills, so that you do not have NLP experts who have to write those pipelines from scratch. You have like software engineers who you know came already having this experience and they know how to do this properly. So you need people of different expertise and they have to communicate. They have to do it somehow together, right? So I wouldn't be able to build that myself. I definitely had to learn that from those software engineers. And they, on the other hand, they must have the capability of understanding the special needs of those, you know, AI trainings, right?
It's not specific to machine translation, but you need whatever, large data, large GPUs, maybe across multiple computers, and all that has to be ready in the Jenkins setup.
And your training takes weeks, for example, right? Well, I think originally the Jenkins pipelines were designed for something that takes hours.
Less than a minute.
The
continuous integration, like the tests that you have on GitHub when you're committing your code, like Travis and others, these are very limited. So that's just technical checks. But here you are talking about quality assurance of the final model. And that's obviously you have to train it first for a week and then see if it performs reasonably on some test set. Okay, so you think the answer is the division of labor. So there can be pure software engineers who know very little or nothing about the domain, about machine translation, and then they can help more researchers in their specific domains, and you can kind of focus on your domain and only contribute the bits and pieces to that integration pipeline.
Yes, but you still have to... You cannot avoid that. You have you will get your hands dirty with that.
Okay.
Great, thank you. So is there somebody else who wants to ask a question? I don't want to call the names, but I now see all names on my screen. So for instance, I see Martin Poppel just next to me. Yeah.
Yes. Hi. I have just a question. Why don't you distill transformer into RNN if you want both quality and speed?
Are we recording? I hope we are not recording, right?
We can pause.
No. We can pause the recording.
So yeah. Please pause it, Dusan.
Okay, just a moment. Okay, so we're on post.
Okay,
yeah, please go.
I hope that this will not discourage other people to ask a question. So, are there any questions? I still see one man on my screen who might have a question, but is too shy to ask. Rudolf Rosa, can you hear me? Or aren't you there?
Yeah, I can hear you, but I didn't think about asking.
Okay. So I have a question, but being an older dinosaur than you, Martin, by many, many years, my question may be very silly and naive, but you spoke about post-processing, and I just wanted to know what I can imagine under post-processing.
Yeah, well, actually... this is very simple. These mostly, what I mean by that are mostly some typographical rules, most of them are about keeping or deleting white space. So it's a very simple, the post-processing here is very simple. It used to be in times of statistical machine translation, we might, it used to be that we did more things. For example, for German translation, we would somehow represent the subordinated clauses, word order changes. We would basically move the preposition or the verb, or you know, do some tricks with word reordering. And this would be our modified training data, so that the post-processing would then include some undoing of those word order hacks. But since we switched to neural nets, we don't do these things anymore. And we are trying to limit the role of post-processing as much as possible. So most of the rules are about handling white space and punctuation.
Okay, so it doesn't have too much to do with the language, I mean, with the linguistic.
Not anymore. We are trying to put as much of the language specific pre-processing and post-processing to the translation models, mm-hmm. and have shared pipeline for front end and post-processing. So
okay.
It really becomes language independent.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. So may I ask again if there are some questions? Just shout. If not, okay.
Just the tech handling. Yes. That's something that many things can be rescued there with some post-processing, and at the same time, many things can be badly distorted in the last phase, which is then the rule-based. And so the good thing about this post-processing for the purposes of tech handling is that there is someone to blame. And you can fix it. You can fix your post-processing rules. So I wanted to ask how much of that is really rule-based with tag handling, and how much is left trained. So I understood that the space reinsertion or removal is trained, right?
That was only in the experiment. So in the so I think currently we have front ends that take care of things like punctuation or, you know, these percent signs, markup handling, and that's about it. So these are this is rule-based. Like identification of markup is rule-based. It's some parsing. And also the restoration of markup might be taken as some post-processing. So this is the amount of rule-based operations that we do: white space, punctuation, and markup.
Yeah, and that is rule-based. So
this is rule-based. Yeah. And the experiment that I was showing with encoding punctuation, that was just an experiment.
And did it help or not?
It did. Yeah. But it changing front ends and back ends in 67 languages at the same time is not that usual. So you know, for such feature that dramatically changes the behavior of basically changes the way your training data looks like, it takes time to get to production because people are scared that it will break something that you do not see in your experiment. Like we use the case encoding, and it took us quite long to, you know, test all the models that it's safe to do that. Like letter case encoding. So,
yep.
These feature that, yeah, that's the thing. The changes in front end are the most expensive one, because then you have to retrain all the models to reflect those changes. And that means weeks of GPU allocations, and that's expensive.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. And if there are no hands or no voices heard, I would like to pass over the microphone, so to say, to Magda to invite us for the next session of our seminar. Magda, please.
Good afternoon. There is no seminar next Monday, so you can be on holiday with your kids who will have COVID holidays. But next Monday, on November the 2nd, we have a guest from the Faculty of Arts. Radek Šimík will tell us about relative pronoun morphology, and he will connect it to relative clause typology. So you can have a look at the advertisement of his talk at our UFAL webpage in the event. So enjoy.
So thank you, Magda. So we will just have a jump to linguistically oriented talk. Well, thank you again, Martin, for coming. I'm very sorry that could not be in person, but just on the screen. But let us hope that it will once happen to have you in person. And I would like to thank everybody for coming. And I'm looking forward to see you at least on the screen on the first Monday in November. Thank you and have a nice afternoon. Thank you.